Hi, everybody. Welcome to Cloud Cover. My name is Chris Reisner. Today, I'm joined by Hashi Bai.
Yep.
And our special guest today is Sergey Bykov. Sergey, would you like to tell everybody a little bit about yourself?
Hi. I'm a dev lead in Microsoft Research, and we're going to be talking about Project Orleans that we've been working on for quite some time and just released at Build.
Can you tell us a really quick summary of what that is?
The easy way to think of it is the framework, programming model for easily building scalable cloud services, kind of modern cloud services.
Awesome. Well, I'm excited. Before we get to that, we just had a big conference, TechEd, you know, just a couple weeks ago. Tons of new announcements on stuff came out of that, and we're just going to go through some of the high level stuff that was talked about there. Getting started with virtual machines, there's now some integrated security extensions that are included in, or you can optionally include with your VM. So stuff like anti-malware, semantic endpoint protection, you know, stuff like virus protection, stuff like that, you can actually just have by default already set up when you configure and deploy a virtual machine. It's pretty cool stuff. You can now capture images with both the OS and data drives attached, so a little bit easier way of capturing kind of a cool view of your virtual machine. As we go down, Azure Express Route is now GA'd, so you know, even faster connectivity between your on-premise resources and Azure. Really great stuff. Multiple site-to-site VPNs and VNet-to-VNet connectivity. IP reservation and instance-level public IPs, as well as internal load balancing support, which I think is a pretty big one, as well as Traffic Manager. I think Traffic Manager, one of the really cool things about Traffic Manager is now it actually works with your on-premise resources. So if you're doing stuff on-premise and in the cloud, you can use Traffic Manager to kind of balance those things off, which is really great stuff. So general availability of the Azure Import Export service. So if you have tons of data you need to import or you want to export, it's now GA'd, ready for prime time. The new Azure File service is available to check out as well. Preview of the new remote app service. So you can remote into an app kind of running in Azure from your devices. Pretty cool stuff. Another big one was the hybrid connections. So hybrid connections are kind of an easier way of connecting your Azure resources to your on-premise resources. So one example of what you can do with this is you can take a mobile service and using a hybrid connection, connect it to a database running in your data center, so you're not actually storing your data in SQL Server on Azure anymore. You're just doing it locally in your own on-premise database. There was the API management stuff, and we actually had an episode on that last week, so tune into that to catch out some more stuff on that. And I think, also then the new Azure Redis Cache service is available and in preview, so you can check that out and see what Redis can do for you. And one other thing, now EA customers and channel partners can actually get into the Azure Store, so if you want to use stuff available in the Azure Store, it's going to be a lot easier for you now. And I think that's it, so I think we'll switch over to Sergey and we'll talk about Orleans and we'll do our prime thing.
And now, our feature presentation.
Okay, so the goal of Project Orleans was kind of twofold. One was to make building cloud services much easier than it has been, but also make it in such a way that the moment you write relatively straightforward code, the code should be able to scale through several orders of magnitude. So if you're building your next Facebook or next WhatsApp or whatever, if suddenly you're successful, you should not be forced to rewrite your architect, throw away the code you wrote, and grow with your user base growth. To kind of motivate it, let's step back a little bit and look at all too familiar three-tier, N-tier architecture that people have been using for the last 15 years at least for building cloud services and web services. In that traditional approach, you have stateless front-end layer, middle-tier layer, and stateful storage. So all your state is really in storage, and writing code is relatively simple because you receive a request, front-end passes it to middle-tier server. You go to storage, fetch some state, for example, user profile, apply an update, and write it back and respond, yeah, I succeeded. Or if it's just a read request, you read and return.
Mm-hmm.
Very easy to program. Stateless, you can scale out in Azure terms at worker role, web role, no problem, just add instances. With the modern workloads where things are much more interactive, you have millions of users, you have a lot of requirements for throughput, but also latency needs to be low because you're in near real-time, a soft real-time environment for a lot of modern workloads. This model started to crumble because storage is the bottleneck. You have to read a lot of data, constantly move it between storage and middle tier and write back. And even though you just a second ago you read some user profile state into middle tier, if the request comes a few seconds later, you already forgot you just read it. You have to read it again. Mm-hmm. So constantly move data. So the industry is smart. They added the cache layer, so Memcached, right. Azure Cache, Redis, those solutions, which simplified throughput and latency, and you can read from cache and middle tier much faster. But the problem is that you're actually dealing with two storages now. You have your still persistent storage, and you added in-memory storage with very different semantics. So in the storage, you have SQL, for example, or NoSQL solutions with some atomicity guarantees, some concurrency guarantees. With cache, you got a very different semantics. You have key-value pair, no concurrency control. Usually, you have to build concurrency algorithm on top. But programming this stuff is difficult. Mm-hmm. And you're still pushing data. Now you're pushing it between your cache layer and middle tier, but you're still pushing data to the function. Another thing I didn't mention is that with modern workloads, a new requirement emerged is for crosstalk. It became more prominent. Again, social network is a good example of that. Where one user needs to talk to another user, needs to talk to friends of users, but it's more than your Facebooks of the world. It's mm-hmm. like if you look at IoT scenarios, you have devices that are talking to device hubs or talking between each other. Gaming is another very social thing where you have players joining their friends for a game session for some time and then move to another session. It's a very dynamic social graph. These models don't really allow you to talk between one user and another user. You can go and make a web service request to the front end and go through the whole call chain, but it doesn't natively support efficient crosstalk.
Okay.
And so for these kind of loads, people essentially rediscovered the actor model, which was actually invented in the 70s, and it was popularized in the 90s by Ericsson with Erlang. So they rediscovered that model, which is very simple. So you have isolated things kind of like object agents, active agents, that have their state isolated, don't share memory directly with each other, and they only exchange messages. So you encapsulate your state and logic within that actor, within that kind of object, and it can talk to other actors. Mm-hmm. And because it's message passing, you can be on a different machine, on a different continent, you don't have to share memory space. It's very easy to constrain your logic, have atomicity at the actor level, and it's easy to scale and distribute. So that was the motivation to go there. And we look at some of this examples on the problem space, but we wanted to rethink it from a kind of grounds up. What is the best programmer experience? What kind of code program model one developer to deal with? Do we really want them to send messages or create these actors? And so we kind of started from the ground up and came up with what we call a modern actor model approach. So you may have seen this slide in our presentation and build, but it's very essential to explain the difference between traditional actor model, what we did in Orleans. So this example is from the Halo case where they have notion of the game grain, game session grain. So in the actor model, you have two things. You have a class of an actor, or sometimes you don't. It's completely dynamic. And you have an instance, the actual actor. Mm-hmm. In Orleans, we added the third column where it's the physical activation of the actor. So, and that's what we call the virtual actor approach, where you can have an actor for a user, but it doesn't have to be in memory. So virtually, it exists the whole time. You can program, you can make calls to it at any point without checking whether the user exists, whether it's in memory, on what server it is. So you can at any point in time make a call, and the runtime underneath will make sure there is an in-memory copy is created to process this request, handle it. And then we'll garbage collect if the activation is idle for a while, just garbage collect.
So the grain is only in memory when it's activated, but it exists virtually throughout the, what's the lifetime of a grain? It's there forever?
Yes, effectively forever. So grain, just I didn't explain, is the notion of the Orleans actor, just to make it it has distinct set of characteristics that are not in other actor models. Mm-hmm. So grain lives forever. It's an logical entity. But physically, it exists only when it's needed. So it gets activated and deactivated many times. You have many incarnations of that mm-hmm. grain on different machines in the cluster, mm-hmm. but they only live when they need it.
So in the case of Halo, which you mentioned was one of the examples of this, what is that grain, like, what does it actually contain? Like, is it just kind of the state of a game that's going on, for instance, or?
It can be anything. Actors or grains, they appear like objects. So for example, if we take an example of a present service where we keep track of who's playing what across all games that are happening right now in the whole Halo universe. So you have actors for a game session, you have actor for the player example, and you have some other actors that supplement functionality. So you're able to model very naturally player and session as different kind of like object, distributed objects.
These are all grains?
They're all grains.
Okay, gotcha.
So this is sort of programmer's experience. It's very simple. So it's .NET interfaces and .NET classes. To define a grain interface, you just need to extend the iGrain, the marker interface, which has nothing. It is just a marker. And the one requirement is that all the methods that you define in an interface, they have to be asynchronous, return a TPL, a task, or a task of T. And that's it. And then you can go and implement the class that implements this interface. So yeah, the marker and the return value, return type. So to implement, you find a class that extends the base class, grain base, and implements one or more interfaces. In this case, we use iHello and implemented the method from the interface. Okay. Again, it's just standard TPL style coding. Mm-hmm.
So this is just a regular class. I don't need to handle any like a grain activation, deactivation, all those things.
You can if you want to. It's a more advanced scenario. Okay. And I want to show some code later. But in general, yeah, you just class gets instantiated and then methods get invoked.
Okay.
So here's how you use a grain. So for example, say this is this method is on the front end and IIS or worker role code. So the first call is to the factory that gets auto-generated at compile time. So you define iHello interface and compiler generates or the code gen piece generates hello factory to get it a reference to a grain with a particular identity. Mm-hmm. So within this grain type, hello grain, you have essentially address space of identities and you define as the application developer, you define what identities you use. Runtime is completely oblivious to that or there's no limitation. So you get a friend which is a reference to that grain. And you see the friend is of type iHello, so you can make a call on that, which under the covers is the proxy object right away. So you make a call, it's an asynchronous TPL call, and you get a task back, which you can await
right.
with the beauty of .NET 4.5 and
async await.
So the getGrain method is that's where the green got activated, right? Is that?
Not exactly. So is where you get the reference to it, which is just the proxy object underneath. But until you make a call, it doesn't get activated.
Oh, okay.
And these references, should mention, they can be persisted, they can be passed as references. I can pass the reference to a friend, to another friend, and say, do something with it.
Okay.
So just the first class abstraction there. So you see the developer experience is very easy, and that was kind of unbelievably easy that people have a hard time believing it would actually work.
Mm-hmm.
But when Halo went in production with Orleans, that sort of removed mm-hmm. most of the concerns that.
I should hope so.
So it does work, it does scale, it does work reliably 24/7. It does handle their most terrible load when happens when they launch a new title like mm-hmm. Halo 4. But it goes beyond gaming. It wasn't built for gaming, it just how happened that I was the first customer. Because mobile backends for devices and users is kind of the same thing. You need to have context of per user, per device context, much like per session, per player.
Mm-hmm.
Internet of Things is a hot area IoT. Again, you want to have a context per device and a notion of some like device hub or location or a car moving and a geographic tile where cars get associated with that tile for a while, then move to another tile. So again, it's kind of like a social network, social graph again. real-time analytics, because grains are stateful, they keep state in memory, you can do aggregation and analytics very easily. So those are a good fit, and interactive entertainment goes way beyond gaming.
But the green you just showed us, that was a stateless green, right? It doesn't maintain any states. The one you just, the hello word, say hello green?
This is a kind of very simple example of stateless, but it can have a state of two things, two kinds. It can have soft state in memory, with just variables that you're okay to lose. For example, in the game session case, if the truth of the game is on the console, then it's okay to lose state because it will be reconstructed by another message. But you can have also a persistent state in a database or an Azure table, for example.
Okay.
I mentioned the real-time analytics. Or another very popular pattern is intelligent cache, where you have your state in a database, and you have grains that represent usually a row in a database or on NoSQL store. And all your reads go through the grain, and because it caches it, you only go to storage once, and then sort of results from memory. And all the writes go through the grain, so it's going to write through cache. It's very easy to implement and very efficient, and scales out very easily. Plus, you have a semantic operation, like with key-value store, you can have operations like update address as opposed to read and write. You can do some checks and validations that are missing guarantees.
So when you're talking about intelligent cache, are you saying I put grains in front of a cache cluster, or this is a built-in feature of Orleans that you can save your states in the cache?
What I mean is, because grains are stateful, like they stay in memory while they're being used, they already have characteristics of the cache. So you don't need another cache in the middle. They already load their state from cold storage and can do many operations.
Okay.
For example, if you access this mostly read and occasional writes, most of that all the reads will be served from memory except for the first one.
Okay.
And the writes will go through. It's a very simple but very popular scenario. So in this case, I defined two grain interfaces. iDevice, the kind of simulating IoT case, but it has just a couple of methods to update state and to get state. And I use string as state. That can express anything. It can be any other type, serializable type. And I defined the iDevice hub, which is hub for many devices to connect to, serial devices, with two methods, register device and gaze aggregate device status of all devices attached to the hub. So device grain is trivial, right? It has state variable, and update just updates its variable and returns. We added this helper thing just to simplify TPL code writing, task done, dot done. And then when you ask for its state, it returns state. If you look at this activate async method, that's the kind of moral equivalent of a constructor. So this method gets called by the runtime when your grain is activated. So this is your chance to do something upon activation. In this case, I chose to call device hub factory get a reference to my device hub and register myself with it. So I chose identity of zero, but it can be more complicated. Sure. Calculate based on your geography, like your tile or whatever you're building the devices in. And then you see I can pass this as reference to my device grain to the device hub, and that just works, even though those grains will live on different servers potentially. They don't share memory.
So in this case, the state is saved in an in-memory variable, right? And if the grain got deactivated, I will lose the state in this case.
Yeah, in this simple example, yes.
Okay.
But you can have persistent state. There is support for declarative persistent state. You don't want to complicate code
Understood.
Here. Or you can even just write arbitrary code to make an I/O call. It's up to you. So there is no constraint. It's kind of regular .NET code. One requirement is everything has to be asynchronous. You're not supposed to block threads, because otherwise you lose efficiency.
But if I say my state, if I write some I/O calls, do I need to handle concurrency issues? Do I need to lock on the resources?
No. So what I should have mentioned, that grains always executed with a single thread guarantees. So you never run on more than one thread. grain doesn't own a thread because you can have maybe tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of grains in the single server process. Mm-hmm. But they all get multiplexed over a small fixed set of threads, usually one per hardware core. So you don't own the thread, and you never run on more than one. So when the runtime invokes you to execute a method, you guarantee to have exclusive access to your state. Okay. And you don't need locks or any synchronization mechanism like that.
Well, that greatly simplifies a lot of coding.
Yeah, it does, definitely.
Yeah. That's what was our goal, to minimize the amount of boilerplate code, minimize the amount of code that potentially error-prone, like getting concurrency right is very difficult. Yeah. So like if we progress to your device hub grain, you see it has a hash set of devices. This is an example of a state that I don't have to have a lock, because whenever I'm called, I have exclusive access to this hash set, or you can have a dictionary. Mm-hmm. And so when this device calls register a device method, I just check if I already have it, the device already registered, and if not, add it to hash set, and I'm done with this method. Mm-hmm. And then when I'm called as a device hub to return statuses of my grain, I chose to use a list of strings just to get a simple example.
Okay.
So what I do, and I enumerate all devices in my hash set, and then send a method call to them, say, give me your state and await mm-hmm. that call, which is not the most efficient way of doing it. You can do a fan out, but I wanted to keep it simple in this case, mm-hmm. and just return a list and the result.
Actually, that's an interesting point. For instance, in the register device method, you are saying the grains will communicate with each other through messages, right?
Yes.
But here from the code, it feels like you are just directly calling that reference, using that reference. You're not really sending or receiving any messages per se. So I guess the audience is handling all those underneath?
Yes, that's a very important point. And there was the point of some religious debate between people in the actor model community. Technically, the message, of course, is sent, because your grain that you're talking to may live on a different machine, and oftentimes is. Mm-hmm. But we chose to expose it as a synchronous method call, because that's the most convenient, more familiar paradigm for developers. Because mm-hmm. otherwise, we would have to implement a state machine and say, oh, I sent this message, but I didn't hear response that encode all this logic.
Yeah.
This makes it very easy to write.
Great. Yeah, that's really intuitive.
And let me show, finally, the client side code. It's code that sort of invokes all this logic. So the first line, I get a reference to a device grain with ID, color coded 55. So it can be ID that device has encoded, ingrained in it. So I'm simulating the actual device. And another device, different ID, 67. So just first one I set updates state to online, and the other one to offline. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm using strings as state. And then when I'm done with this, I get a reference to device hub factor with the same identity that I hard coded in device activate async method. Mm-hmm. And just say, give me your statuses. And print it. So it's as simple as that.
Okay. I think another point is this, because the grain exists virtually all the time, so you don't actually need to check if a grain exists or not. Basically, you just give it the ID. If it doesn't exist, it always exists. It just gives you an activation back. You don't need to handle the case to create or update. You just get a reference to a grain, which always exists.
Yes, and we hear from developers that use that it's a very important feature for them. Mm-hmm. Because as you can imagine, in this three-tier NTR architecture, you have load balancer in front, and requests go to random front-end servers. Mm-hmm. So you may have requests for the same user or same device being concurrently delivered to different servers, and they go to try to check. If they were to try to check, does a grain for that device or that user exist, and then decide, no, it doesn't exist, I need to create, and then do this concurrently, and one will succeed, other will fail. Mm-hmm. All this complexity is removed because they don't do that. They just say, give me a reference, logical reference to this user or device grain, and just make a call, And all that is serialized, and then the activation is, of the grain is handled by the runtime.
What I really like about this is none of the code you've shown us is really anything more complicated than what, you know, I don't do a lot of .NET, but all that looks pretty comfortable and easy to me, but it really is so much more powerful because of the Orleans framework it's running on. So that's really, really cool from my perspective.
That was the goal, that you can take any desktop developer who's been doing successfully desktop applications and knows not necessarily much about the cloud, but they can just write code that which will work and will scale. So you can build a lot of stuff with little effort. And we're hearing from folks that have been using Orleans for a while that they get developer productivity 3 to 5x conservatively.
It's pretty powerful.
So we didn't, we weren't looking for percentages. We wanted to have factors of improvement there.
Awesome.
So let me try to run this just to prove that it works. Mm-hmm. My old laptop. I want to get Surface Pro 3.
There you go, yeah.
I have to wait.
You know, the multiple position kickstand.
Yes. And i7 processor.
There you go.
Yeah, it's a lot of logging from just the host process we call silo. We have grains and silos, kind of two agricultural terms we chose to use. And some people make fun of that. So what's running is the developer environment. That's not an important point. This developer environment is exactly like what you run in production, but it runs in a single process within Visual Studio. So F5 experience is right there. And it's a kind of true development environment. You can have multiple host processes simulated within the same process in different app domains, and they talk to each other through TCP. And you can put breakpoints and debug it right here on the laptop, so you don't have to go and deploy.
Nice.
It's a very fast turnaround. So you see we printed that, we said device 55 status to online and device 67 to offline. Mm-hmm. And now if we make a call to device half-grain, we see that it returned its statuses. Pretty trivial, but it took a few lines of code for that. I should have mentioned that when you get Orleans SDK, we install a few, three I think, project templates. So if you go to new project, when it opens, right here we have Orleans Grain Interface Collection for defining grain interfaces, Orleans Grain Class Collection for implementation logic, and this Orleans Dev Test Host is what I'm running on my laptop to show and test and debug code.
Okay. And now when people want to grab the SDKs, can they just go to the tools and updates, or where do they go to grab that?
So if you go to aka.ms/Orleans, you get to connect site, and you can download the preview of the SDK that we released that build.
Okay, great.
And we have a CodePlex site with documentation, samples, and
what
robust
sort of
discussion.
What sort of samples will they be there? Like, what will that demonstrate how to do?
What kind of samples we have there? So we have a Twitter-like pops up application where the users follow user and they can publish. What else do we have? I think we have a presence like scenario for gaming, keeping track of what players in what game session. We have more than that. Some IoT cases. I'm blanking on.
Okay, great. Okay. Cool. We'll make sure we get these links at the bottom of the episode as well. Is there guidance included in there on how to actually take that and then deploy it onto Azure?
Yes. So if you go to orleanscodeplex.com, you'll see documentation section with documentation how to use it, some articles we've already wrote, and a discussion forum where people share questions, suggestions. And
great. Mm-hmm. Awesome.
So when you deploy the project based on Orleans to Azure, you're essentially deploying the silos to worker roles or web roles? And then build the front end in front of it?
Yes. So when you build your, define your worker role, you essentially combine binaries of the Orleans runtime, the silo dimension, and assemblies, the grain assemblies that you compile. Mm-hmm. So you deploy it as the worker role, number of instances. And those instances start and form a cluster on their own. So there's a cluster membership protocol that takes care of who's there, if those instances get restarted, for example, for patching. It's all completely taken care of by the runtime, so the application code isn't exposed to it. And then you have front end, which may be the web role or worker role, which loads a client library with exact same program model. We have get grain, make call, await on the task.
So you're saying the silos can form a cluster that I can host my grains, right? But say in the case you just showed that if I use in-memory state, will it be possible if multiple activations are triggered on different silos, the states will be synced between those silos?
We have two models. So the default model is a single activation. Okay. So you only have one instance of a particular grain, like the user or device, in the whole cluster, and we route messages sent to that instance.
Okay.
That simplifies, again, state management.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's not a category when you say this grain, you can mark it with attributes, say this grain is stateless. For example, it needs to do a decryption and extract ID of the actual grain it needs to forward message to. So it has no state, really, and no dependency. So those we scale out. So not only we place them locally to the caller where we receive requests, we make sure we process with an activation on that silo, but also we create many instances of it so that we can have parallelism there.
Mm-hmm. So if it's a stateful grain, there will be only one activation at a time across the cluster?
One or zero.
One or zero, okay.
Because if it's idle, we garbage collect you and there's no need to waste resources.
Okay,
great. Well, this has been really awesome stuff. I'm looking forward to playing with this stuff myself. I'm sure Hashi feels the same way.
Yep. I actually did.
Oh, well, there you go. Wow, he's ahead of me then. So, Sergey, thanks for coming on and talking about Orleans. We really appreciate it. We'll make sure we provide all the material you mentioned at the bottom of the show, as well as anything else we might come up with. Do you have a Twitter handle people can follow or reach out to if they have questions?
SBYKO, you'll put it there.
All right, we'll make sure we get it there for you. So as always, make sure you follow Cloud Cover Show. And again, thanks for coming on, I appreciate it. Hashi, thanks for joining me. And everybody out there, thank you for watching.
Thank you for inviting me.
All right.